Hi, this is Charisse Kenyon, and you're listening to the Beauty Me podcast, all about beauty beyond the BS. I'm not going to lie, this week's guest is someone that I've been really excited about. I think we've been talking about it for a couple of months, and it was one of those, I was like, will it happen? Won't it happen? Don't be too keen. Don't be too eager. Don't nag her. But it's finally happened. I've got makeup artist B-Sweet on the show. She really lives up to her name. That's one thing I'm going to say. I've only met her through, you know, the computer screen, but I just feel she is the sweetest person, a really beautiful human, actually. She has an aura that comes through the laptop screen. So hopefully I'm going to get to meet her face to face soon. But for now, we had the best chat. And obviously, I should tell you just a little bit about her before we get into it. B-Sweet is a London-based makeup artist. She's often compared to Pat McGrath. Now, if you know Pat McGrath, you'll know that she is classed as the queen of makeup, especially when it comes to those stunning Fashion Week looks, editorials. So that is a pretty big comparison, and it's a really worthy one. And we're definitely going to get into that later. Aside from that, B is someone who, if you don't know her name, you will absolutely know her work, from her stunning videos like Georgia Smith's Try Me to several videos for my fave, FKA Twigs. Plus right now, go out and see her very first, well, go out and buy it, B's very first British Vogue cover featuring the one and only British Australian actress Miriam Margolyes. It has to be seen, this cover. It is a work of art for so many reasons. And I'm really excited to share with you a behind-the-scenes story from that shoot, actually. So definitely stay listening. Elsewhere in the episode, Bea's going to look back on the products that really got her into beauty from a young age. And she mentioned some real classics that I haven't remembered for a while. So I'd love to know if you remember them. She really blows my mind when she shares on her formal music training as a child, and it makes a lot of sense because, as you're going to hear, Bea has a really beautiful voice, even when she's just speaking. We have a really interesting conversation around what Bea classifies as being hot, because it's a word she mentions quite often. So we have a chat about how it differs from being pretty. You'll hear her reference some websites and influences that definitely lean more into the darker side of beauty, more edgy. And she also shares about her experiences with Torture Garden, which, if you don't know, is a London fetish club that opened in the 90s. And she's also going to share some really unusual stories from her time as a plus size model. By the way, make sure you listen all the way to the end of this episode, because then B is going to share the four products that she cannot live without as a makeup artist. And they're really interesting, and they might not be what you'd think they would be. So throughout the episode, you might hear her allude to those products that she's choosing. So just listen all the way through, because I guarantee it's well worth it. I think anybody will enjoy this episode. I don't think you have to be somebody that wears makeup or works in makeup to appreciate it. It's got everything that makes a good episode. It's got a bit of nostalgia. It's got lots of inspiration. And you're going to hear some great, amazing behind the scenes stories from Bea's favorite shoots and videos. So I hope you love this one, because I really did.
I just want to know your morning routine.
So I'd be lying if I said every morning doesn't start with a social scroll, because it absolutely does. You know, like that advert that's like, you're not yourself when you're hangry. I feel like I'm not myself without an iced latte, except for I do decaf and half a shot of vanilla syrup and oat milk. So it kind of takes all the joy out of it. But I was trying to, be better with my choices. Because I used to have a lot of coffee in the day, and I've stopped that. I have a really minimal setup for my own face. I have natural freckles, but I always put them back on using a freck pen, except for it's not actually the freck pen. It's the Barry M tint.
Really?
Freckle tint. Yes, which I swear by. I use it on everyone, if I'm honest. On me, I use the light medium, and on someone like Twigs, I would use like the medium dark, and that's my literal like go-to. That's not one of my top three products, but it is my every single day usage thing.
I don't remember the last time someone told me they use a Barry M product. Like, I'm going to have to mention for my American listeners, they won't even know. Like, what can we compare it to? It's the cheapest of the cheap, right?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, my first introduction to Barry M was with their Dazzle Dust. Do you remember Dazzle Dust?
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, I think it was £5 for, like, one pot that used to last forever. And I had a pink shade that had silver glitter in it. And I wore that all the time. And I loved Dazzle Dust. I had so many different colours. And actually, I looked, I would say, in the last few years, and I saw that the range is obviously a lot smaller now, which is a shame because that was such a standout product from them.
And now everybody has a product like that.
Now everyone has a product like that. Yeah, Dazzle Dust was the OG.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did it before. Yeah. Like, because I know if I think of a product like that, I guess I think of Makeup Forever or Bodyography maybe or. Mm. But yeah. Mm. Oh, and MAC.
MAC. Oh, absolutely. MAC Pigments, definitely. But this was like this was the budget friendly version of that. This was the accessible thing, you know. It was like there was a makeup shop in Southend where I grew up called Mixtures, and it had everything from, you know, the ones that have body jewelry to flags to makeup, and then brands that I honestly haven't seen anywhere else before or since. I don't know where they got it. Like, they had these giant foundation tubes that were just huge, and I would get everything from there, and they had Dazzle Dust in there. So that was the go-to. They did like lipsticks for like £2, you know, and that was what we did. We didn't know any better or different.
But I think that's the thing, because you're a creative at heart. So I feel like you must have gone out just looking for things to help you create or express yourself, perhaps.
So oh, definitely.
I feel today social media has turned it way more into what's in your kit. Who have you got? And always having the new, always new. I think there's a big pressure to have the latest thing instead of.
There is. And, you know, I'm going to say something on that. I don't know if that's a bad thing.
Mm.
Because, for instance, Charlotte Tilbury sent me through a big bag of stuff like a few days ago. And I absolutely love what I've been sent. There's so many things in there that I hadn't tried before. And now I actually don't even know how I ever didn't have them in my kit before. Like the contour wands I used yesterday, I love them. I absolutely love them. I love how they go on and I love how they sit on the skin. They're perfect for the way that I work. And one of my favorite products that I've saved that as like one of my favorite products. So I'll tell you about it later.
Okay.
It might be the Beauty Light Wand.
I revealed the shade
name, but like even these, I'm like, wow, actual game changer. I used them yesterday and I was like looking in the monitor. We were filming a music video and I was just looking in the monitor like, oh, that highlight is so hot.
I agree. Like, whenever I've bought Charlotte Tilbury products, it's never missed. Like,
yeah,
something about the formulas.
Right. And it's made for, like, you know, girls that love their face and just want to be gorgeous. And it really, they actually do that. They do just help you be really gorgeous. And I am so into that.
See, I love that you're into that because I feel like, say if someone looks at your work, I feel like your work, you can do everything. You do skin, but you do color so beautifully. And Charlotte Tilbury isn't a brand that maybe you would associate with a makeup artist like you. Do you know what I mean?
Not necessarily. This is it. This is why I think also I'm even surprised, you know, because you wouldn't marry us straight away because I'm not the super glam, let me give you a gold eye glam, but I am glam, mm-hmm. and then I'll do something different on your eye.
We've got way off track, but we'll keep that in.
Sorry.
I'm sure Charlotte will love that. But let's go back a little bit. Obviously, you are like, I can't remember when I found you, but I just feel like when I made a video about you, so many people were like, oh my God, I've been loving this person's work without even knowing who they are. Mm. And it was just like this fascination with what you do. And I just want us to go all the way back so people can paint a picture of, because there's where you are now. And I want to know, like, what were your first memories of beauty? Like, tell, can you remember the first time that you knew like beauty was a thing or makeup was a thing? Like, what was that for you?
I think for a lot of people, they would say it starts with their mother. And I'm going to say the same thing. She had a yellow push-up lipstick, and I don't know who it was by, but it was by, you know, an earlier brand, like a Max Factor. And I've never seen anything like it since. It was almost like a clipper lighter, and it was really hard to push. And then it had like a very frosted pink in it. So I don't think it was even new. And I was obsessed with that. And I remember she would go out and I would do her hair and makeup. I was really small, you know. And then you remember glitter roll-ons? I had like a glitter roll-on. This was what, you know, like, again, cheap, nasty. And I would like roll glitter all over her shoulders, and she'd be like, I can't go out like this. And I'd be like, yes, you can. So that happened. And then
how old were you? I just want to paint a picture of.
I must have been like 8, 10, something like that.
You were thinking of like highlighting your mum's collarbones and shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was absolutely mad for it. And then I don't know how I inherited some, you know, like Stratum compacts, like, so vintage makeup.
Okay.
And I got a few of those. And then I started going to like charity shops and collecting them. And that was when I was a little bit older. So probably like, you know, early teens. And then my nan gave me all of her old Avon perfume bottles, and they were in the shapes of, they had some that were like in the shapes of swans and, you know, just weird things, not weird, amazing things that just are not produced today. And they were all glass. I've got them all. Oh. And they're amazing. And I, if you like Google vintage Avon perfume bottles, there's so many that I think they're beautiful. So I had that kind of thing. And then I was a classical singer, and I was studying opera, and I had the choice to either study opera or study makeup, because when you grow up with a very musical background, it's very, very intense. You know, like I had music theory lessons, I had choir practice, choir rehearsals, choir concerts, music festivals, the rehearsals for that, all my music theory practice. And it's very, very, very intense and consuming. And so when I hit like 15, 16, I wanted to go out on the high street with my friends. Mm. You know, I didn't want to be in the church hall having choir practice every single Saturday like I'd done for the past 9 years or more. So I started to, I guess, rebel. And I wouldn't go to choir practice. I would like go into the high street and hang out with my friends. And I think when I chose makeup, I was really choosing myself. I was choosing something that I wanted to do rather than something that I'd been trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was very good and I could have continued studying. I was looking at Royal Academy of Music or like the Birmingham Conservatoire or something like that. But I watched Harry Potter, as I'm sure everyone else did, and I just loved prosthetics a lot. And I thought, I really want to do prosthetics. So I applied, and I applied to the London College of Fashion. I didn't get in for the first, I think, 3 years that I applied. And then eventually got in and went to university. But that was because my mum said to me, you either need to go to university or get a job. They were my two options. And I was like, well, I'm not staying here. So then I went and I, you know, tried to get into uni, eventually did. And that's the long, long, short version of my first memories of beauty, of like how it came from, I guess, that push-up lipstick all the way into university. There's some more in there, but that is the loose journey.
Just to pick a little couple bits out of there, I'm just intrigued, the whole musical side, was that something that both your parents kind of did they want for you, or was it that you showed promise and they...
I was very good at it.
Yeah.
So I think they were encouraging of that. And I think that's a great and lovely thing. But I also feel like there's a time, you know, when you grow up a little bit or you're like trying to find things out for yourself. So I needed to have some space created to be able to do that. And so I created it for myself.
So do you feel when you were going through it at that time, did it feel like I'm choosing for myself, or was it just a path that you were led down? Right. Yes.
You know, you don't know these things. That's the benefit of hindsight. You don't know what you're going through while you're going through it. You can only know what you're going through once you've had the time to reflect on it. And I think that's something I've learned from that, is I had no idea what I was doing at the time. But now I look back, I realize that's what I was doing. I just didn't know that. And I didn't have the language to explain those kinds of things either back then. And I'm not actually sure anyone did. I don't think we have this, you know, we have a different kind of language about ourselves.
I mean, it's
now.
Hard enough just getting through each day when you're a teenager.
Right.
So I know what you mean. And didn't you also start your own brand called Hair Orgy?
Yes.
Tell us.
Oh. So
I love the name. I'm like, where did that come from?
Okay. So this is more to do with my first job in beauty and makeup, because I used to do hair, makeup and styling on my best friends. So we were anything from when we were like 14 to 16, I would get them around my house or I'd go to their house. I'd do their hair and makeup. And we'd go to charity shops and we'd like pick little outfits out. Like, I've done such embarrassing shoots with my friends. We still laugh about it. We're still in touch now. And we're like, oh my God, like they're both mothers now. Like, you know, like times have changed so much. And I'm like, I still shot you in the bath. Like, it's really funny. It's so, they're so bad and embarrassing, but also kind of really, you know, there's like a beauty to how juvenile they are, or like how, raw they were. It's just, it was literally girls shooting girls, like shooting their hot friends. And there was a slightly dark side to it, just because I didn't feel that beautiful. So I felt like I wasn't beautiful enough to be shot. So I would do them how I wanted to be and then shoot them like it. So there was that side to it then. I can honestly say that's not the case now, but it definitely was then. And, I don't know how this happened, but I started, my first job was, doing the makeup, for a club called Torture Garden. I can't remember how, I think I was like doing hair and makeup online. Oh my God. I remember it was called Model Mayhem. So I was a member of Model Mayhem.
This.
Yes. And I would, take me and my little makeup trolley up to London and do shoots. And so I made lots of like, friends with latex designers or like, you know, like fetish designers, because I was very into, you know, that kind of thing at the time. And I ended up doing makeup at Torture Garden, and I met this hairstylist, and we would do loads of projects together. And basically I would never get paid from it, obviously, but I would get paid maybe if I was doing like a rubber show, I would get, you know, someone might give me a dress and I'd get free entry to Torture Garden, which I thought was the coolest thing on the planet ever. So I would take myself up to London and go party at TG, do all the makeup backstage, party, and then the first train home would be at 6 a.m. so I would grab my little makeup case from backstage and then go home with it. And that was where I started doing makeup, was at Torture Garden, really, which is hilarious now if I think about it. But actually, I think I've heard it's still a really good night out. So
I've never been, but I've definitely heard about it.
Yeah, it was amazing back in the day.
But where did Hair Orgy come in then?
So I used to make hair pieces because, you know, I would dress my friends up, and I would make these massive hair pieces that I just loved doing. But I think at the time as well, you know, there was kind of like a gothic subculture happening, and a lot of people wore hair pieces. And I would look at, I'm not sure you know, I condone the name of it now or how I feel about that, but you know, the website Suicide Girls.
Yeah.
So I would look at things like Suicide Girls and I would look at how they did their hair, and everyone had, there was a lot of back combing, you know, like there'd be shaved parts and then a triangle, if you remember the triangle fringes, and then giant hair pieces. So I would make these hair pieces. And I had, I made a friend on MSN who set me up a website. And yeah. And I called my website Hair Orgy, and I never sold anything. And that was it. I did put them on my friends, though. I put hair pieces on anyone that would let me.
I love it.
But I chose makeup in the end.
Now, I just want to go back a little bit just because I'm always... Whenever someone tells me they used to feel this way about themselves and then that changed, I'm always like, I always want to know, because I feel that I still have, I have those days when I'm just like, I'm like what you said you were, I'm a photographer and I would much prefer to be behind the camera. Like, I make TikToks and that's been like a lesson for me, or like the more I do it, I feel better, you know, like stop picking your face apart and saying how wonky it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, you, so as a young person, you're saying you like to make up your friends because you didn't feel you were beautiful.
Right.
Tell me about the process, about how that changed.
Well, I actually haven't thought about it before in those terms, so I don't really know if I could pinpoint a time. Mm-hmm. But after that, when I went to uni, I then became a plus size model. I joined a agency called Ugly Models.
Okay.
So basically I was at uni and I was super, super plus size. I was a lot bigger than I am now. So I joined that agency and it meant that I got lots of jobs that sort of helped pay for me through university. And I'm not sure, I'm just trying to link this all up in my own head about how that correlates to before, but I'm just trying to think about my own journey. Mm-hmm. I think back then I just didn't feel pretty enough, but then kind of forgot about it and moved to London. Moving to London was a really, really big thing for me because, you know, I came from, I guess, a small town, well, Southend. I mean, I don't know how small that is, but it felt small. And then when you move to London, there's a completely different mindset. So it felt like all the things I was before, I suddenly wasn't. Like before I moved, I felt very different because I was gay, but very feminine. And I didn't see other gay feminine girls. And all the girls I knew were like very dykey dating, very dykey. And I didn't feel I fitted in there. And then when I had my friends before, they were all really like gothy and really hot, mainly because I was doing their hair and makeup. And then like no one wanted to date me, I felt. Mm-hmm. And so then when I moved to London, it actually all changed because I suddenly realized, oh, hang on a minute. There are actually like girls that like femmy looking girls. And actually I don't have to have like a big backcombed hairpiece on. People like think I'm hot anyway. Mm. And people had different opinions, you know, of like what is hot in London. Mm. And you meet other people that like you because you're a bit different or a bit interesting. And then I got bigger, and actually even that became a cool thing because when I got super big, I was then able to monetize that. And, you know, I was really poor in university. And then because I was really, really comfortable, fully comfortable with nudity in my modeling job, I got lots of nude work and that paid more. So I was like, well, this is great. that was great for me. And my opinion of myself kind of, I guess, just changed because I had more affirmation about what I was is okay, whatever that is. And
it's like that validation, I guess.
Validation. Yeah, validation.
Not that that's what we should all go after. But I feel like every time you took another picture, or every time you did another shoot, that must have been making you feel a little bit, because you say you were comfortable in your body.
Yeah.
But when you put your body or anybody's body in the world, that's when issues can arise. But instead, people are hiring you purely based on how you look.
Yeah. And that is fine, as long as it's done in the right kind of context.
Yes.
I was very cautious even then. And again, I didn't know as much as I know now. I definitely didn't have the language to explain it then either. But I was very big, and I was very conscious that my body was really beautiful as an art form. But when I felt that was compromised, I would turn jobs down.
Right.
So if it was something inappropriate, or also if they would try, they would, I got so many job offers in asking me to eat things. Like, you wouldn't believe the, if you're a plus size, I don't know, actually, I don't know if this is still the case, but for me, when I was a plus size model, they just wanted me to eat things. I got so many offers of, like, I don't know, go here and eat chips, go here and eat this. And I was just like, no, I'm not going. Like, I had a job that was going to pay something like £500, which was a lot of money to me then, and still is a lot of money. It was to go stand on King's Road. I had to wear leggings and a bra and eat cake with my hands for £500. And it was only a couple of hours, but I was just like, no, that's so degrading. Like,
what was the mission with that picture?
Why do you want to just watch someone fat eat? What is that for you? So there's, I feel like that, having those experiences gave me a slight insight to modeling. So, which is really ironic now, I guess, because I work with models all the time now. But I would never embarrass them or myself by going, oh, I was a model once. I know how it feels. They'd probably look at me like up and down and be like, okay, sure. And also, you know, we do such different work. I
do like that, but I'm just like, you seem like someone. But again, this might all be with hindsight. Like, maybe at the time you were just getting on with it, but you seem to like, know what you'd like, or know yourself, because a lot of people that can be tough, especially let's say if you were that person but social media was there and the way it is now. So I feel like
that's a really good point. That was just slightly pre-social media. This was all, I think, about 2011.
Right.
2012. So maybe it's just before all of that kicked off. And so I didn't have, you know, loads of comments, or I wasn't trolled. I was just kind of left to it.
Yeah.
And I found some really amazing communities as well, like really fat queer communities that I really loved being a part of. So I guess I called it just before the rise of social media. And actually, I think I'm kind of grateful for that, because my experiences, minus some, were all really positive, actually. So that might have opened a different can of worms, you know, to the negative comments and things. And I'm sure that would have felt very differently at the time.
Yeah, it's like comments, they're so quick. And I was literally having a discussion with someone. He's a gay creator, and he made this video with a brand, and I was really upset with the comments. I really wanted the brand to protect him, because it just went, you know, people say it went to that side of TikTok.
Yeah.
And it's like, just coming for the fact that he's gay, like stupid comments, ignorant comments. And I messaged him and I was like, hey, I'm just letting you know I've seen them. And because he was replying to them all, and I was like, it's not my business. But I was like, try not to talk back to all of them, because you will be there all day and it will have an effect on you. It will. It doesn't matter how bright and witty you are, because we know you as being fun loving, it's going to take a toll. So I feel perhaps if you'd been finding yourself or making up your friends into these beautiful images that you love, but you didn't quite see yourself there, but you had social media right there, how that would have affected you?
Very differently.
Would you have been so creative?
I think. Because what we did actually, we did put it on the internet, you know, onto like Model Mayhem and things, or also MySpace, yeah, of course. But nowhere else. And I think it's all pretty much disappeared into the ether now. Mm. Even though it was public, it was also very private. We were doing it for us, which feels ironic as you share it publicly, but we were doing it for us.
Mm.
And I guess no one was benefiting off of it financially, so there was no pressure from brands.
No brand or, being tagged. And
you
stuff.
Know, there's nothing. No, there was nothing like that. It was literally like, here's my hot friend, the end.
I love that, though. It's like, because, you know, people talk today about if you want to get into content creation, find your niche, and niche all the way down. And that seems like what you were doing. Your niche was this big.
Making girls hot. It still is, actually.
Well, you do that really, really, really well. You're in your career. You have been doing makeup for so many of the big names for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever found any, just like I mentioned social media there, I feel like some makeup artists, when I've spoken to them in the past, there's been this kind of judgment of, you're not serious if you share your work on social media, if you share behind the scenes. I feel there can be a little bit of a snobbery. And I just wondered if you'd ever had any experiences with that, or if you've managed to kind of skate over that.
There was definitely a time when that was the case. Now I would say it's done a complete, is it 180, where it's turned on its head, and the more you share, the better. However, there are some circles where that's not the case. I was with a photographer the other day, and I will just say they're iconic and amazing, and old school. And they basically caught my assistant with a camera and wasn't happy about it. And I was actually like watching it, and I was just like, huh, that's interesting, because I haven't seen that happen in honestly years. And I don't think it was just because it was my assistant. I think it could have been me. It could have been anyone. It was just like they were very unhappy about the sight of a camera that wasn't theirs. I would call it an old school approach, but I might reconsider that with a little more thought. Maybe there's something in there to do with like retaining your own image or your own voice, or having mystery. Control over the situation and the mystery too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why this makes me draw this comparison, but there was a stage where if you worked in fashion, you couldn't work in celebrity.
Oh,
and I remember when I was first looking through for agencies, you know, I said I did fashion and celebrity, and people looked at me like I had two heads, because they're like, well, pick a team, you know. But now, if you turn down celebrity, like, you're the one with two heads.
Yeah.
It's like, get with the program.
Exposure.
Like, this is what it is. This is how the future looks. You can't just work in fashion now. I know that's controversial. And I know.
Fashion's taking a battering. I mean, at least with celebrities, rightly or wrongly, they are often there to promote what they're working on. Then the brands that you use on them, they will be seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big circus, isn't it?
It is.
Whereas fashion is becoming a bit more, I don't know, it's been taking a beating when it comes to, you know, sustainability.
Everything. Paying people.
Oh, gosh.
Like.
Toxic as well, behind the scenes. Fashion has taken a beating.
All of that stuff. And so I think people have started carving their own way. You know, they're carving their own paths. They're not looking always to join a big agency. Some are. That is fine. But also there are other smaller agencies launching that are there to nurture the talent. And I'm here for it. I think that fashion needed that kick up the butt.
It did. I've always noticed the divide. It's like,
yeah.
I always used to say, If I was going to fashion week with a fashion brand, it could be seen as more bitchy. Whereas if I was going to fashion week with a beauty or hair brand, it was more gossip. And there's a difference.
There is a difference.
There's a big difference. I don't know. Doesn't mean that I don't love fashion and admire it, but you know, behind the scenes it can be very non-diverse in thinking.
Very true.
So when it comes to your work, I just want to talk a little bit about your work here. If you could describe it for my listeners with your own words, how would you describe your work? Is there a way you can describe it?
I've used words before, like feminine and deliberate.
Yes.
I think I like making people hot. I've said that before.
Mm.
I like interesting elements. So maybe it has a lot of unexpected elements in there. I don't really follow trends. Like if there is a brow blocking trend, I won't then be brow blocking.
No.
Only if I think it makes someone hot. But I'd rather actually bleach an eyebrow, if I'm honest, or if they let me shave it. But I do like the texture of bleach. So I'd rather do something like that. Although there are some trends I can really get on board with, like lip lines. I love a defined lip line with a gloss. That is one of my favorite all-time things, and that will never die a death, in my opinion.
Love that.
But ways to describe. Textural, probably, because nothing excites me more than texture. I am a texture queen. I love, one of my favorite products I'm going to show you. I love it just for the texture. Everything is actually for the texture. And I like bouncing textures. So if I have a matte center face, it will make me really happy to do something glossy on a lid. Or if I have, you know, like a clear shine on the cheek, again, I would like a matte center face. But then if I have a dewy center face or a dewy face, if I could do something in a really heavy, heavy pigmented matte on the eyelid, I would be so happy, because I feel that's when you can notice the product the most. So textural. And I don't think I can think of any other words.
That's cool, because I want to take you back to hot, because I love, I feel like hot is such a specific word.
I love hot. And
it's not pretty necessarily. Or I guess it's pretty and hot, but... You tell me what's hot. Tell us what is hot compared to beautiful, pretty.
I love that. I didn't even think of it in those terms, but I think you're right. And that is maybe why I would choose hot over pretty, because pretty would be something very expected and maybe very quaint or predictable, whereas hot can really be whoever and whatever. It could be hot, can be whoever that is, and it can be whatever that looks like. Because hot for one person could be a shaved brow, like that's really hot. Also, hot for one person could be a completely unplucked brow, and hot for another could be slightly plucked. You know, in my case, hot for me is overplucked. That's fine. Even like, you know, I got braces, you can see, and I was Googling after, it was like, how do people, like, do people still think you're hot with braces? And it was like, no, people, you know, there was some statistic, I don't want to get it wrong, so I don't want to quote it, but it was something like you're 40% less hot with braces, or, you know, it was something ridiculous like that. And I just read it and I was like, oh, whatever, like
you don't feel it.
Oh, whatever, like I feel really hot with braces.
40% less hot, but it's like I feel it's
subjective.
I feel like pretty is maybe something you could do to everybody, make someone a little bit pretty. But hot is like you've got to bring something out.
That is such a good description, and I wish I thought of it. Can we pretend that I said that?
So. Would you be up for telling me some of your favourite jobs or favourite faces or favourite looks that you've done so far?
Yes. I remember, so actually with that dazzle dust, that pink silver dazzle dust, pink with silver bits dazzle dust, I worked on a music video with Twigs, and it was called Ouch Ouch, I think. And it was, that was about 2012, and I used that dazzle dust, that exact dazzle dust, all over her eyelids, and she swallows a ring. They do it in CGI or whatever. That I still love to this day.
Okay.
I think I loved the early work we did together. I love our new work too, but like our early work, like Pappy Pacify video, still to this day is, I don't want to say it's my favorite video, but it's my favorite video. And she knows this. And actually, I feel like I tell her every time I see her, I'm like, you know, I really love Pappy Pacify. I still really love it. And I actually love it as a song. And I remember he's like fingering her throat at one point. And I just remember watching the whole thing like, oh my God, this is just the most beautiful music video I've ever seen in my life. And I still think that. And there's a scene basically where I cover her face in glitter, which is hilarious because she would never let me do that now. So I love,
really?
No way,
of like having to take it off, it's just like too much.
I just think she wouldn't think it's cool now, you know, like her way evolves constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And she wouldn't go back to that. She would do it in a different way, I think, but not like that. I think she would do it in an ironic way or a really beautiful way, but not in the way that we shot it then.
Mm.
And then I can't remember the name of the video. It was one of the Capri songs we did, and I did them. It was for Honda.
Okay.
For the Honda music video, I did the big white, black and red eye. And I loved that. She had a mullet for that. And I loved like the biker chick scenario with a mullet and a really heavy eye. And she was meant to be in a jock strap on the bike. But there were health and safety concerns to do with the riding, so she had to wear trousers in the end. And I was just like, that is such a shame. Like, a girl in a jock strap on a bike with heavy eye makeup and a mullet and a leather jacket would have been so hot. But it ended up being trousers, so we can...
He's one of my favourite artists for looks and videos and same. Music. Like, artist.
Same. Me too. Other favorite looks. Georgia Smith, we just came, you know, her latest Try Me music video. We went to Marseille to shoot that. And we went to a chalk quarry. And one of the scenes, but when I say chalk quarry, I mean like it was astronomically huge. It's freezing cold. Everything is chalky. I feel like my lungs were just chalk when I left. But there was a part where I had to cover her in chalk. And I basically had to, I literally oiled her from head to toe, and I just had to pick up the chalk and throw it at her. Wow. And put it everywhere. And I loved that because I feel like that's the kind, I still think that's super hot when we talk about creating hot girls, because I've still done her face perfectly. I will still absolutely beat her face, but then I'll rub chalk on it and I think she looks incredible. So things like that are really exciting. She also let me airbrush her face with, you know, Try Me written on it. And I think that was quite new for her, and also made me like super nervous because I was like, oh my God, I'm about to graffiti on Georgia Smith's face. Like, this almost feels blasphemous, but I did it and that was great.
Yeah, I love that video. I made a video about that video. Yeah. Because that was just like, the storytelling was just so beautiful. And the song is so strong.
I love it. Other favourite job. Oh, other favourite jobs. I love every year. Well, every year for the past 3 years, I've worked on the Selfridges Christmas campaign. And I love it because there's not many moments I get of validation where my mum would be proud, because she doesn't understand the industry. So when I say, oh, mum, my makeup's in the window of Selfridges, she like gets it. So I was able to show her. She can't travel that far, but I can show her on my phone. I'll be like, oh, this is my working windows of Selfridges. And then she understands that. And also my British Vogue cover, because I just got my first British Vogue cover.
With I've forgotten her name.
Miriam
Margulies.
And shot by Tim Walker. And that was really iconic because we had to go to Miriam's house. Oh, my, this is an interesting. Well, I think this is interesting. So we wanted to use lipstick on her. And I thought, and I was like, Miriam, what do you usually use? And she's like, oh, a red, dear. Well, like, you know, sometimes a pink. I was like, oh, do you have any of your lipsticks? Because I was like, wouldn't it be cool to like actually use something of hers? Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, there's a box in my bedroom. Go get it. So I went into her bedroom and I found this box full of her lipsticks. And I was thrilled by this. I can't tell you how thrilled I am because they were all vintage. The single most new lipstick in there was a Ruby Woo by MAC. And that was clearly a new addition. Mm. Everything else I've not seen before or since. And they were all, when I took the lids off, you know, they had, you know, the unusual shapes because it's like where someone's had years of applying the same lipstick, but they were all slightly different, you know, and I guess that could also be because texturally how you put on a matte might not be how you put on a satin, you know, and a lot of them were frosts and I hadn't seen really frosts in a bullet for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm not unless you go to MAC where they do some really, you know, staple kind of frosts, but not these kinds of frosts. And I was so excited because I don't even have those tones in my kit because they don't exist anymore. Oh. They don't exist. And I took pictures of all the lipstick bullets because I just thought this is like an amazing case study of lipstick bullets. I mean, I probably can't even share them. I have no idea what I'll ever do with them. They were just interesting to me. And so the lipstick on the cover of that was one of hers. I can't even tell you what it was. And all the other ones were all these vintage. And because they were old, they applied, you know, quite like thickly, which was even more exciting because then you get like such a heavy set pigment on the mouth. I loved that.
That is such a cool story. Like, I wish I'd been there. I can imagine and just...
So exciting.
The fact that she just said, yeah, go get this box. And to you, it's like a treasure trove of...
She has no idea how exciting that was. She's got no idea. She's just like, oh, yes, it's in my bedroom. Go get the box. Like, she doesn't care. Like, she doesn't know. And, you know, she's shooting anyway. So what would she wouldn't know how exciting a box of, like, old lipsticks is to someone.
Oh, wow. I love that. She is such... She's a great icon. Person for not giving amazing. Any... So
amazing. She's amazing.
So is there anyone that you haven't worked with yet that you would love to work with? Like, you know what you would do to their face if you met them.
So I've always wanted a big supermodel and I would love someone like Alec Weck. Alec Weck, I remember seeing years and years and years and years ago and just absolutely loving her so much. Loving her. So I would love to work on her. I think also, you know, Michaela Cole.
Yes.
Michaela Cole.
The cheekbones. She is
so gorgeous. I can barely breathe when I look at her. I just think you are so hot. And I love her face. I love her tone. I love her. I'm a really big fangirl. So someone like her as well. And, I would love Solange.
Oh my God.
I think I'd be a great fit with her.
That has to happen. I can see that.
I'd love that. Because she does things like a really bare face and then like a purple pigment on the eye. And that is really, really up my street. Also, I mean, I feel a little silly saying it, but I'd love Rihanna as well.
To be honest, that's the one that everybody's going to say. Yeah. So don't feel silly.
Like, no. I just love her so much. But I also know me and her makeup artist follow each other on Instagram and I am a really big fan of her makeup artist as well.
Hello.
So I am, you know, not trying to like take that client, but I, on a very personal level, you know, we all stan Rihanna. So
yeah,
her.
Everybody understands that.
Yeah. Actually, also Miley.
Oh, gotcha. You know,
yeah, because Miley loves a really heavy eye. Loves it. And I am so here for a really heavy eye.
Okay.
I just love...
I like a heavy eye.
I love that she's like... It seems like the more the merrier on her eye. And I just love that. I love the idea of just being able to like really cull it on and then like press in a pigment and mm-hmm. loads of, not a fake lash on her, but like a really heavy natural lash. Something like a lot of thickness around the eye. So someone like that excites me because I know that they're going to let me really go for it.
And do you ever do these kind of looks on yourself?
Never.
Why are makeup artists like that? Like never. Pat McGrath, I think I've seen her with a red lip.
Does
once.
She? No, she doesn't. Interesting. I guess because we're not really. I'm just trying to think back, you know, even from my beginnings, I've never really been inspired by myself.
So you never experimented on yourself, even back in the day? You would rather have somebody in front of you?
I did experiment on myself. You know, with my hair pieces and things, I did wear those as well. But it was more exciting to see it on someone else. And it still is now. I don't actually like much hair and makeup on myself. I think it's kind of cooler if I don't. Like, I've stopped wearing lash extensions and I'm just doing like a lift now. And that's only because my hours are so long and I feel like I need my eyes actually open that I do it at all. And the only thing is I'll put back, you know, like I say, in my freckles, I won't really do much else. But I think on other people, it's like, it's more about character creation or helping them realize the character that they want to be at that moment. Whatever that is, even if it's like a super chic red carpet, then that's the character they are that day while still being themselves.
Right. So let's get into products now, because
ooh.
I was like, obviously, we'd been talking before this interview and afterwards, I was like, I need to know her top three things because maybe I will get the Be Sweet look. Just maybe.
Yes. I have four things.
Four things is even better.
Okay. So the first is Fenty Beauty Gloss Bomb in the shade Fussy, because it is so universal. I don't think there's a single person that I haven't used this on. It is absolutely my favorite and everyone loves it.
I love it.
There's that one. Number two is a wild card. It is called Amethyst Astral Lip Fetish Astral Lip Balm by Pat.
Oh.
And this is really funny because I showed this to Georgia Smith the other day and she was like, oh, that's scary. And I was like, haha, yeah. And I just put it away again really quickly because I had every intention of using it on her. And then she got scared. So instead of being for her, I've now given it to myself. And it's like got a shine on it, which I know isn't for everyone. Mm. And I know that not everyone would want a slightly purple glitter shine to their lip. But I think with nothing else, just like mascara on the top eyelids, just this, I love it. And I love the texture of it. So her loss, my gain.
Well, I'm going to try that color because I love the product. I've got it in two other colors, but I haven't tried the purple.
Oh, I love it. I didn't even know that came in other colors. So now I'm going to have to get them. Danessa Marrick's Evolution Powder. This powder is my favorite powder in the world. Here, I've put it into one of the kit pack bottles because what used to happen was I had basically three giant sacks of just face powders and my kit was three giant Burton suitcases, each weighing 30 kilos. So that was hell. So I've decanted everything and made it small. But this powder in shade number two is my go-to powder.
Is it super mattifying or?
It's really sheer.
Okay.
It's very, that's a good description. It is very skin-like. It's very sheer and it just kind of sets without adding too much pigment. But the tone of it is just right for so many girls. So I love it. It's used to death. I fill this up all the time. I have to like just keep filling it up. because I go back for it over and over and over.
Okay.
And then my fourth one is something that I was given a few days ago, you know, from the Charlotte Tilbury batch. And it is Pillow Talk Beauty Light Wand Easy Highlighter in number 2 medium. And I am obsessed with it now. I love it. And I don't actually know how I ever didn't have this before. Like, it goes like that and then it blends in perfectly and it makes everything shiny. I just love it.
I'm going to have
to get it. But it also doesn't feel like it's going to move, which is great for red carpet, really.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we used it on a music video. And like I say, I was just gagging at the screen the whole time, really excited about the highlighter. So that
when
was
it.
When
is this video out? I'm going to have to keep an eye out for it. I feel like I can guess whose video it is.
Yes, you'll be right with who that is. And that, I don't actually know. I didn't even ask, which is ridiculous.
Okay.
I'll get the intel and let you know.
Yes, I'll keep my eyes open. So, final question. Oh, there's two actually. First of all, I just wanted to know if there was any kind of message that you ever want to convey when people see your work. What do you want people to get? What do you want people to feel?
Just being hot. I just love creating hot girls. I love working with women. I love all women. I'm a really big girls' girl. I will also say non-binary too, as long as you let me put a lot of makeup on your face. I hope that when people see my makeups, they can see that I really love it. I hope they can see that I'm so, so into it. I won't put out a makeup that I'm not happy with. I just really only ever want someone to feel great. Like after being with me or having the makeup done by me, I just want them to feel hot and great. And if they do, I'm ecstatic the whole day.
Oh, I love that. Even after all the time you've been doing it, you still get
time.
That.
Love it. Love it. I did something yesterday that was really simple. Not like groundbreaking, but it was so beautiful. I was just super gassed. And I came home and I was going through all the photos on my cameras. I have like different cameras I document things with. And I was just showing my girlfriend at the table. I was like, look at this in this light. Oh, it's amazing. And she's like, yeah, it's good. But obviously no one's going to be as excited as me.
But that's the important part.
I get home and I'm still trying to show people. Well, I'm still trying to show her my makeup.
I love that. So final question, finally. When do you feel the most you, but I want to know, when do you feel hot?
When do I feel hot? I love getting dressed up. I think a lot of people might say, you know, they feel the hottest when they're, maybe not hottest, they feel the best, you know, when you're at home or it's a Sunday and you've just got like the dog and a cup of coffee and something. But actually, like I went to a Mac event at the Box the other day and I wore like cowboy boots and like a big, like a velvet dress that I hadn't worn for ages. And like they cut my hair into the bob and things. And I was like, oh, I love this. Like I felt really kind of bitchy and hot and I was just so into it. And that's when I feel the hottest is when I guess it's almost like when you're in character. And I guess in that moment I was in character, but I also think it's got a lot to do with my cowboy boots. Cause whenever I put my cowboy boots on, I feel amazing. Although we have a bit of a love hate relationship because they got me stopped at the Eurostar. But apart from that, I love cowboy boots and wait, they call them Western boots, okay. Western boots. And, that's when I feel hottest, probably in my Western boots.
See, it's funny that you say that. Cause I feel like, I think you shared a couple of pictures from you at the event on your Instagram. And I was like, you look so happy.
Thanks.
You know what I mean? Not that you don't look happy in other pictures, but there was something about these.
It's because I was smiling. This is a new thing. This is honestly a new thing. When when I've taken selfies before, I will never smile ever, ever. And so I've never smiled, but then because my girlfriend was taking pictures of me and then I dropped basically, I had the giant lipstick. There was this giant wooden lipstick. And this person was like, oh, be careful, because one of these lipsticks is broken. And there's like, you know, six lipsticks there. So then I pick this lipstick up. Obviously, it's the broken one. And I start dropping this lipstick on the floor in front of, you know, the Mac PR at the Mac event, at the bottom, in front of everyone. I was just like, oh, great. So this, I'm the one that is dropping this in public. And I was just laughing about it. And then I looked back and I thought, actually, they're some of the most beautiful images, aren't they? Like the ones where I'm actually really belly laughing because I'm being an idiot. And that is funny.
And it was real. I can laugh
at that. It was real. It's funny. It's fine.
This has been such a good chat. Thank you so much, B.
Thank you. It's really, really fun.
So, did you enjoy this episode as much as we did? I really hope so. Let me know over in the DMs on Instagram or Twitter. Well, actually, it's X, formerly Twitter. You can find me there, Beauty Me Podcast. Be sure to check out Bea's work on Instagram at BeSweetBeauty. That's B-E-A, then the word sweet and beauty. Definitely don't miss out on the videos that I'm going to be sharing from my chat with Bea over on my TikTok at Charisse Kenyon. I definitely think if you enjoyed this, somebody else will. So please pass it on, share this episode with anyone, and feel free to tag me when you're listening on social media. As always, I always want to know what you want more of on the show. So stay in touch. And if you did enjoy this episode, it would be great if you could hit subscribe so you never miss another episode. And also if you could leave the show a review, it would make a huge difference. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time.